Law and Gospel, the Reformation Solas, the Theology of the Cross, the Means of Grace, Simultaneously Saint and Sinner. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity. It's written by regular guest Dr. Al Schmidt. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity is published by Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040, or read an excerpt at issuesetc.org. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Leave here. This castle is alive.
Who's there?
Do you wish to take your father's place?
Come into the light.
Show me the girl.
Look at her. What if she is the one? The one who'll break the spell.
Hello.
You can talk.
Hell, of course he can talk.
Hello, pleased to meet you.
The Master's not as terrible as he appears.
I say we kill the beast!
Think of the one thing you've always wanted. Find it in your mind's eye and feel it in your heart.
There's a bit of the trailer for the new live-action Beauty and the Beast produced by Disney Studios. It's a box office hit. It follows the course of that animated feature that was produced in 1991, greatly beloved by the people who saw it the first time, who may well be taking their kids to see this one for the second time. Joining us to review this movie, Beauty and the Beast, Pastor Ted Giese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
There was a lot made, especially on social media, before this movie came out, of the director's comment about a gay scene in the movie and a gay, openly gay character. Was that overblown or was there rightful concern about it?
Yes and no. Okay, so how to explain this? Essentially, there is a lot of media that downplayed it and focused in on something the director had said, that there was an exclusively gay moment. So some things you would read online would make it sound like there really wasn't very much of anything, and that this was like a tempest in a teapot kind of a deal. And then you had quite a few people also talking like very much about this. This was like a something that online people were really quite bent out of shape about. So listeners will have run into both of these things online. What then do you actually get in the movie, right? So the movie, there's this character of LeFou, who is the sidekick of Gaston, who is the archetypal hero who is actually cynically made to be the villain in the film, at, just like in the 1991 version of the cartoon version of the film as well. So it's the sidekick who is going alongside the Gaston character, who they've made quite obviously homosexual. I would say, like, there really are no scenes in the film in which the character of LeFou is in the film where there isn't some sort of reference or innuendo or blunt example of homosexuality in that character. So, you know, but how much is that minor character in the film? Not as much as the Beast or Belle or other characters. So yeah, it's there and it's sprinkled liberally through the whole film. I don't know. Does that kind of help put a finer point on it?
Let me give you an example of two reactions I heard recently from people who saw it. I have not seen it. Talking with a couple who had seen it, and I said, well, how did the whole gay issue come across in Beauty and the Beast? And they were like, well, the character that's supposed to be the gay character here, the LeFou character, was kind of overdrawn as a stereotypical gay character, probably not the, and kind of the village idiot, not a positive portrayal. That was their take. Then when my daughter and son-in-law went to see it the other night and they came back, my wife asked them, well, what about the gay character? And they both in unison said, what gay character? It simply didn't register with them.
Right. This is interesting because there's a Toronto Star article that makes this point and says, for some people, the character is going to be too gay. And for other people, the character is not going to be gay enough. So this is one of these spots where, in a way, the filmmaker, Bill Condon, is a little stuck. I mean, he himself is an openly gay guy and he, homosexual man, and he, of course, may then want to include things like his point of view on stuff into the film. This is what everybody does when they make movies. Disney already would have known his background and his the movies that he's made in the past, and he's made movies that dealt with, you know, gay characters and things in the past. So, and they gave him enough rein to, like, enough of a leash to, or enough freedom to include what he wanted to include in the movie. So then the question is, how much do you include? How much do you not include? What do you do? I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, well, LeFou was always a gay character. But I think that this is kind of in the past, like in the 1991 version of it, that was deep subtext. And in this film, it's more blunt. I mean, it would be hard. It would be hard not to notice some things. But again, I went into the movie being somebody who pays close attention to what I'm looking at on the screen. And some people, you know, are more focused on other parts of the story.
You point out, however, that with respect to another character, that which was at least voice acted by Ian McKellen, who's an openly gay actor of some pretty big box office draw and repute, there is something that you noticed.
Well, this is like kind of a peculiar thing. And I didn't, like, for space, I didn't include it in the final version of the review, but we'll talk about it now. Ian McKellen is an openly gay guy, and he was actually an actor in a film that Bill Condon had done in the past about the life of the director of the Frankenstein movies, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein from 1931 and 1935. It was a movie called Gods and Monsters from 1998. So in it, he played the director of those movies, James Wales. So this is Ian McKellen, right? So now Ian McKellen plays the character of Cogsworth, this enchanted mantle clock in the Beauty and the Beast movie. And at the end, it's a fairy tale. So at the end of the movie, the curse is broken and everything goes back to the way it should be. And everybody's being reunited with family members and people that they had, like, lost track of because of the curse. So you have, like, this very interesting thing from a Christian point of view of all of the everything being set to right. It kind of points to the resurrection on the last day and the happy reunion of the faithfully departed, all that kind of thing. But in the midst of all those happy reunions, now the mantle clock has become the, you know, butler to the, your, the, some individual working in the household of the castle where the Beast was the prince before. And there's Ian McKellen. And Ian McKellen is then reunited with his wife. So this, his wife is a lady from the village, but he's not happy about reuniting with her. And he wants to go back to being a mantle clock because he didn't have the wife and he didn't have, it's very subtle. And unless you knew a bunch of other things going on, and perhaps a lot of people are going to hear this and go, you're reading a lot into that. But it really depends on who the director is, who the actor is, what they decided to do with the role in that spot. Did it have to be like that? It's kind of played for laughs. Why is that there? You know, is it because he's a closeted gay individual, and now he's reunited with his wife that he doesn't really want to spend any time with. What is that all about? Or is there nothing there at all? But it is a kind of a curious little thing. There's also a couple other spots in there where, you know, like the chest of drawers, who is this opera singer, she dresses people in the enchanted form of herself, like she dresses people for things. And in the midst of fighting near the end, there's a big brouhaha, and she like dresses up two men in women's dresses, and the one is horrified and the other one is very happy with that and like kind of does a little spin and walks away. So it enters in these little, you know, cross-dressing transgenderism kind of elements into it as well. And the exclusively gay moment is one where LeFou ends up kind of, as they're dancing at the end, ends up dancing with one of these guys that's dressed as a woman. So these are just little touches, light touches that are added in all over the place in the movie. And the question is, does anybody really care about that or not? And when the movie made $170 million domestically on its opening weekend and only actually cost $160 million estimated to make, it doesn't look like the viewing public is that worried or that engaged in this particular issue.
So how well does it stick to the 1991 animated? This we could argue that this is animated too, just in a more sophisticated way.
Yes,
but
yeah.
How well does it stick to that story that many of its current viewers saw as young people want their children to relive the magic of watching that film in 1991?
This is, again, I mean, it does a fairly good job. I mean, it is certainly part of this wave of nostalgia, and Disney is cashing in on it. It's one of a scad of movies that they're taking, you know, the original cartoons and making them into live action films. There's another one coming out next year, Mulan. I guess they're going to do that as a live action film too. So it does stick pretty close to the original material, and it does a fairly good job. But one thing that I did notice was there is a kind of maybe a coarseness to it, that it's a little less kind in a couple places than the original was. For instance, there's this scene at the beginning where Belle, the heroine played by Emma Watson, is in her town, and she's walking around with her book, and you're being introduced to the town, and it's a kind of a famous little song from the movie. But in the original one, she wants more for her life, but she's not angry, or she doesn't have like disdain for the town. She doesn't look down on the town. But in the new version, there's like a little bit of an edge to her, and she does have some disdain for the town itself. Like the town thinks that she's different, but she also doesn't really like the town. And it's this added little edge of, it's not as kind as the 1991 version in terms of just the character isn't as kind in a way. And maybe that's somewhat subtle. I watched the movie and then I went and found some YouTube clips and watched different portions. And that's kind of what I noticed. And I think people who go back and look at that probably would see that too. And maybe the whole culture that we live in is less kind and more coarse than it was in 1991.
Pastor Ted Giese is our guest reviewing the movie Beauty and the Beast. When we come back, the animated 1991 film was for children. That's when they were producing all of those animated children's films. A little bit for their parents too. Is the live action version that has just come out still a children's film? Stay tuned.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon, is a mid-Willamette Valley LCMS congregation where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast or visit our website at www.HolyCrossLutheranAlbany.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, etc.
The Christian faith is a gift of God's grace. The Christian life is a gift of God's grace. We live by faith in the Son of God who loved us and gave himself for us.
Pastor Peter Bender talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues, etc. Making the Case Conference.
And that means that our Lutheran piety is also a gift. All too often we see it as another work of the law, something that we must do. Instead, Christ meets us there with his word and spirit, and in our daily devotional life, he teaches us what it is to live by faith in the Son of God who loved us and gave himself for us.
You can meet and hear Pastor Peter Bender making the case for Lutheran piety Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest, reviewing the movie Beauty and the Beast on this Wednesday, March the 22nd. Ted, the animated feature from 1991 was aimed at kids. This was the heyday of Disney's animated films. They were making one about a year, I think, and they were making a lot of money because the kids were the target. Is this still a children's film?
That's an interesting question. It's certainly operating within the family entertainment genre of filmmaking, because when you go to the theater to see it, you're going to see just piles of families with kids. It you know, when you move out of cartoon into live action, it's a little, you know, like it's more mature just by virtue of the way that it's presented. That doesn't mean that the original was, you know, completely good for kids either. And I think that whenever anybody makes any of these kinds of movies, they do this thing, and you've seen it a million times, and like with kids yourself watching things, you'll notice they put in innuendos and they put in jokes for adults that are not for kids. So they're always kind of trying to hit two audiences at once. And, you know, with this, you know, like it's certainly going to be watched and viewed by many children. But is it like exclusively for the kids, and then the parents are kind of like the afterthought that they're trying to appease with a couple things here and there? Or is it more like this is just a movie and you're going to go see it, your kids are going to go see it, you're going to all go see it together? Maybe it's more the latter than the former, if you know what I mean.
The story itself deals with kind of an interesting topic, and of course Disney is no stranger to the darker side of the fairy tale based animated features that it's done. But this is a film about captivity, and then that turns into love. Talk about that.
Yeah, fairy tales are interesting. For anybody who, you know, grew up on, you know, kind of sanitized fairy tales. You know, as soon as you find an actual copy of Grimm's fairy tales and you start reading the original texts, you find that they're more like folk tales. They're for folks. They're for people. So, like I was just saying, you know, like, you know, movies for kids or where the adults are an afterthought, or just a movie that everyone's going to see. I think originally fairy tales were kind of like, these are just stories for everybody, not just for children, but also for families and adults and people of all kinds. And they operate kind of as parables within society, like in a way. And you go back and look at some of those ones, and there's a lot of religious content actually. But in this particular case, I mean, this is not one that's in the Grimm's fairy tale canon, but a lot of those fairy tales can have some very dark elements. This particular one includes, like you were talking about, something sort of akin to, and we hear about that now more so, this idea of Stockholm syndrome, where it's a condition in which the captive ends up falling in love with the captor. And there's something uniquely broken and problematic about that. So in the case of this movie, in nutshell, for those who don't know how the story goes, there's a prince who is selfish and vain. He spurns an enchantress in disguise, who then curses him by making him look like a beast, which is against his vanity. And he has to stay that way until such time as somebody would love him for who he is, not looking at just his features, but seeing him, kind of a thing. And it has to happen before this rose loses all its petals, etc. And in the course of that, then he ends up actually spending time with this woman who becomes a captive because she takes the place of her father. Her father steals a rose from the beast and is imprisoned in the beast's castle. She switches places with her father so that her father can be free. And then in the course of that, she and the beast spend all this time together, and eventually they fall in love. But that is like a very peculiar and not a very good thing. So it's easy to see how that could be a sort of thing where you could have like abuse and trouble. And there's even like a moment in it where, you know, she gets, it's supposed to be playful, but she like gets smacked in the face with a snowball. And it's just not, when you stop to actually think about it beyond the fact that it's, you know, this fairy tale, and you start to think about, well, what does this look like in real life? Then you start to think, well, these are not necessarily good, wholesome relationships in the first place. And this is not the way that it all runs in actual life, where there often is not a happy ever after at the end of a story that starts like this.
You mentioned before a scene, it is, spoiler alert, it's the transformation scene wherein the beast is finally, through the love of Belle, allowed to return to his human form. And no one who's watched this in the animated feature or this one or in the Broadway play, if you're a Christian and have any kind of knowledge of the resurrection, can miss it, whether it's intended or not, the, I would call, accidental allusions to a resurrection scene. What are your thoughts there as a pastor?
This is the best takeaway from the movie, actually. Like, if you do end up watching this with kids, or if there are kids, or even if you've watched it years ago, and maybe you're going to take a pass on this one in the theater, but you remember the cartoon, or you've seen that Broadway musical, that is maybe the best takeaway. The breaking of the curse and the transformation that occurs. And like I had talked about, like the happy reunion of people who are separated. So essentially it's kind of like, it's an allusion towards the idea of like the beastly nature of sin being washed away and you being who you were supposed to be. So that's really good. They throw in a little something for millennial hipsters where Emma Watson's character of Belle says to the beast afterwards, you know, can you grow a beard? So it's a little funny moment in there. But it is it's really kind of a touching, beautiful thing, and the way that it's done in the movie is good. And then on top of that, there is there's this little moment where or think back to this little moment where you see the outside of the castle changing. So it's not just the people who are being restored, but the buildings themselves, the very land, the location is all being restored. So this is like the new heaven and the new earth kind of stuff from the Book of Revelation. And as the castle's being restored, there's this Pegasus, that statue that is transformed into like St. George and the Dragon. So you get like this, you know, image of evil being defeated that like literally shows up at the moment that everything is being transformed back to the way it should be. So that's probably one of the best moments in the film for that kind of thing, like to get a good point across that a Christian would look at and go, wow, look at that. That's good stuff.
It is a CGI film by and large, either lots green screen or a lot of it just produced within the guts of high powered graphic producing computers. And sometimes that works great and sometimes it doesn't. I've heard from people saying when it comes to the teapots and the mantle clocks and all of those things, it's perfect. When it comes to the beast, it's not the same. What did you sense there?
I would agree. Like the hair is hard, right? Like you got a hairy beast. So like when they have like real close, like close-ups of like just his eyes and like the bridge of his nose and like, you know, it would look like a close-up of you. Just like if you looked really close to a dog and you looked very close, and that looks good. But actually it's the mid-range stuff where things look a little off. You know, so the beast is a more challenging, it's just more challenging, like from a design point of view. Certainly, like the porcelain on, you know, Mrs. Potts and Chip is great. This stuff is wonderful. You're right. It's just that the beast, unfortunately, is not quite as good as the beast could be. But you run into that lots. Like these people are pushing the envelope on trying to make really, really good things. So, for instance, even when we were talking about Rogue One, you know, there were a couple characters that were CGI and included, and there's this uncanny valley. Well, this doesn't really fall deep into the uncanny valley, where it's like it's kind of repulsive or something. But it's not as, like, there's some moments that are great, and then there's some other moments that are not as good. But it's all above average, let's say. It's like there's nothing like super like eye-rollingly terrible in this movie. It's just not as proficient maybe as things like Mrs. Potts and Chip, like the teapot and the chipped like little teacup.
Well, as you said, but if you add up U.S. and foreign box office, it not only paid for itself, it made twice as much as it cost to make. In the very first weekend, does this cement the fact that Disney's going to continue to make its animated films into CGI live-action films?
Oh, I think so. Like the thing about Disney now is that Disney has three major products. It has Disney-related, like the catalog, so all of these, like Beauty and the Beast, Maleficent, which we talked about, which is their take again on the Sleeping Beauty story. You know, the Jungle Book, which we talked about, and Alice in Wonderland, and a bunch of these. This is one of their products, and then they also have the Marvel movies and all the Marvel related things, and then they have the Star Wars stuff. So I guess the question is, like, there are people who love these things. So with stuff like this, when all of a sudden you get a director who decides they want to inject some things into the movie that maybe you personally are not, it's not something you would embrace or love, you know, then the question is what's more important? The fact that I love Beauty and the Beast or what's been added now? And I think people might not care as much about Beauty and the Beast, let's say, because it's a single thing, but what happens when they do that with Star Wars? What happens when they increasingly do that with Marvel related things? Like, I think everybody watching these things has to have some sort of, I don't know. They just have to think about what they're looking at in terms of that. So I guess like Disney is a company. So they are wanting to make money. They're interested in entertaining people, but they want to make money. So really, you know, they're compromising with the world to not be out of step with the world, to, you know, not lose revenue in some way, to virtue signal, all of this kind of stuff. But that's not really a Christian biblical principle. You know, St. Paul would say, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. The Christian's going to have to tangle with that, not just with things like Beauty and the Beast, but with whatever they're watching. And it's okay to do that, and particularly if you're a parent, if your parents, if you're a pastor, if you have some responsibility to have some discernment and show that for others, like for kids or for other people. I mean, it's okay for Christians to be engaged in some discernment about what they're looking at. And remember that, you know, corporations do things in particular ways, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to just go along with it.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He's taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You can read his review of Beauty and the Beast under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
If you appreciate conversations on the topics of Christianity and culture, you do not want to miss this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine will be making the case for natural law, and Terry Mattingly will be making the case for news discernment. Other speakers include Pastor Matt Harrison, Pastor Peter Bender, Pastor Todd Peppercorn, and Pastor Chris Roseborough. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. The 2017 Summer Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, part 9 of our series on Lutheran identity. Today, we're going to talk about the Divine Liturgy.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors. Coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of, A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission at ctsfw.edu.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
O Lord, open my lips,
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Emily Post recommends polite conversation on topics like the weather, but the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's magazine, The Lutheran Witness, is no Emily Post. Go to cph.org/try-Lutheran-witness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 issues and receive the March issue covering controversial topics like climate change, overpopulation, and the intersection of science and theology. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/try-Lutheran-witness.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.